Hey, good morning. So it's a pleasure to be speaking with you today. Would it be fair to say that for most people in this room, that there are challenges with people actually using data in practice? So you may be trained academically, may know the skills, but if you're actually a producer of information, it's hard to get policymakers and others to actually use information. So I see a couple of nods around the room. So I'm going to be talking today about how our organization has moved towards creating a culture of numeracy through an intervention aimed at better using epidemiological data for decision making. So just in keeping with the requirements, I have nothing to disclose. So our organization, Peel Public Health, is the second largest public health unit in Ontario, Canada. It's situated just west of Toronto, and it services a population of 1.3 million. And so for context, for those of you who aren't familiar with Peel, the Toronto International Airport is actually in Peel region. So Peel is in a tremendous mode of growth. We add about 20,000 individuals to our population each year. And so we need to be ensuring that, that we understand the changing population and the health of our population, and make sure that we're putting our resources and money in the right place. So over the past few years, our health department has dedicated resources to build the infrastructure and ensure that staff have both the tools and the skills to use research evidence in making decisions about programming and service delivery. However, what seems to have become apparent over the past few years is that that generalizable research evidence doesn't always get translated into local context as can be described with using local health data. So for example, an intervention may be described in the research literature as having high impact and very effective, but will it have the most impact and reach in our Peel population? And so that's why it's critical to be using that local health data to make the best decisions. So just to further emphasize this, because data influences policy decisions and programming decisions, both which use staff and financial resources, and we're an organization that's funded by public money, we need to be making sure that our decisions bring the best value to the population and have that impact on population health. So I wanted to give you an example of where data-related decisions can result in cost savings. So medical surveillance for tuberculosis is federally mandated every time an immigration medical examination is conducted. And so that can be multiple times for visitors or temporary residents. In Peel, when we looked at our data, it showed that there were a low number of tuberculosis cases that were identified through medical surveillance. So we had 36 out of 3,517 when we looked across a five-year period. Now, 34 of these cases, and this is an important point, would have been picked up through other case-finding means. And so when we looked at the public health costs of conducting medical surveillance, of finding those 36 cases, it came out to about $250,000 a year, which is pretty substantial in a budget of $81 million. And that's not to account for nursing staff time. Peel presented these data to our provincial government, the Ontario Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care, and it's now opened up a provincial discussion about what is the role of local public health departments in medical surveillance. So just to tell you a little bit about our organizational structure of Peel, it consists of four main divisions and approximately 700 staff, and that includes staff in two specialized units, population health assessment and communicable disease surveillance. And we have epidemiologists who manage and synthesize and provide data to staff across the entire health department. So a lot of people have said to us, well, what is the problem? You have epidemiologists and health analysts that can do the number crunching and using data for decisions for you. So the problem is that many program decisions, if you can imagine 700 staff in a health department making decisions for a 1.3 million population, many of the decisions are decentralized and they're at the team level. And so there's no way that 13 FTEs can be responsible or even apprised of decisions that are being made at that scale. So there do need to be some degree of skills to understand and use the data at the team level. And so staff need to be able to understand, you know, what is the nature of the population that's being served, the impact of the work that they do on the health status of the population. And then a lot of these individuals are sitting at community tables representing our health department, so they need to have some degree of context. So the need to be using or to be skilled in using data has been recognized both at the provincial and federal level. At the federal level, the Public Health Agency of Canada had put forth public health core competencies for all practitioners, with two of the competencies having the describing the minimum requirements for knowledge and skills in using and applying health data. Now, for our health department, or for our region, these skills really haven't been reflected in the curriculum of many programs, such as nursing, for example, where the training focus has tended to be that one-to-one clinical focus and not so much the population health perspective. I see some nods, so I see that echoes around the room. At Peel, 50% of our staff have been clinically trained across five different decades. So it is important to be able to take people from academic to and clinical practice to public health practice. But even with those new core competencies on paper, there is no process for individuals to do that. And so our objective, as part of the work that we did, was to help staff achieve that minimum level. So I've shown in a previous slide how data have been used to make some important decisions. But it wasn't happening consistently across our health department. So how did we know that that the data wasn't being used effectively? We knew anecdotally that staff weren't really using that data optimizing that use, but we wanted to have evidence to support our observations. So we did a document review of council reports and program planning and evaluation documents. And in our review of 26 council reports, which are used to present to our Board of Health, Regional Council, options for decision making, we found that half of these documents had data issues. So that ranged from missed opportunities to use appeal data or incorrect use of data, or sometimes piece of data plunked in without any interpretation at all. So once we knew that there was a problem, we needed to better understand why. And so just to summarize, we didn't have a systematic process in place to support staff to use and effectively interpret health data to make informed program decisions. To understand the drivers of the problem, we conducted an organizational needs assessment, and we did it based on the research literature to determine what is the most effective way to do this. According to Mishi and her colleagues, behaviors can be organized into 12 domains, and we use that to help understand how behavior change occurs in healthcare professionals. And we did this to guide the development of staff interviews to understand why our staff were using or not using health data. So we conducted one-to-one interviews with 32 staff across different levels and divisions within our health department. And through this, we got some insight into the problem of using data. And so namely, those barriers were poor knowledge translation strategies. So for example, staff would say to us that, I would love to use the data, but I don't even know how to access it. Role clarity was an issue. Confusion over who was actually responsible for making decisions that considered the data. What is the expectation of me in this role? Lack of skills or confidence in skills, and then also lack of processes and tools. So again, staff are very busy in programming and service delivery, that it would be helpful to have a trigger to know when to use that information. One of the interviews that we did was with a seasoned supervisor trained as a nurse who'd been in public health practice for about 20 plus years. And she'd opened up during the course of the interview and told us about how daunting it was to be at a table with senior practitioners, our medical officer of health, as well as newer graduates who are more comfortable with using data and evidence. And even though she had a lot of experience, she was more likely to sit back and let others make the decisions. So to someone like our senior practitioner, telling people, well, you know, here are the core competencies that you need, and asking them to work in new ways, it feels like you're sitting at the edge of a precipice with no way across. And so our work was to establish that infrastructure and the supports to help staff like these succeed in being able to use data effectively. So one of the first things that we did was to provide access to data for staff. We developed web pages that were populated with the data that staff identified as information that they needed to help deliver their program. And so, for example, for our tobacco control team, they need to know current smoking rates. They needed to know who smokes by age and sex, for example. The next thing we needed to do was to understand and document competencies by role. So what did staff actually need to know for their job? And so using the federal core competencies in the public health sciences and assessment and analysis, we developed measurable competency statements or objectives that describe the specifics about what should be known about the competency. And the measurable piece is important, which I'll come back to, is we also developed an objective competency assessment tool that we plan to use to measure the current state of knowledge of staff so we could tailor staff training. And so this is a sample of our competency objectives with the appropriate level of skills mapped by role profile. So in that first column, we have the competency statement. So for example, to recognize that a health concern or issue exists. The second is the specific objective that we developed or that we wrote out. Staff should be able to describe a peel health program that is relevant to their program area. And then the next three columns are the role profile. So the third column, role A, it would be frontline, role B, specialist, and role C, management. So the key point here is that not everyone needs to have expertise in all of the competency objectives. For example, all role levels should be able to recognize that a health concern exists. However, it's primarily those in roles B and C that should have the ability to make recommendations based on the analysis of the information. During the next phase, we focused on determining the best type of training method to enhance staff skill around enhancing understanding and the use of data. So we looked at the literature around skill development for assessment and analysis. It was limited, but it was often indexed in the research base for building competency around evidence-based medicine. As it turned out, we identified two review papers that identified that for workplace-based interventions, problem-based learning and practice-integrated teaching methods were the most effective for professional practice, as well as for sustainability and longer-term retention. We also wanted to ensure that when we introduced our skill-building intervention to staff, there would be minimal fear and maximum engagement in the learning process. So in that case, we applied learning theory, particularly Knowles's adult learning principles, as we wanted to be able to acknowledge the expertise of our staff and be respectful of who they are and how they learn. We created an assessment tool based on the competency objectives to establish the current knowledge and skill of our staff. So the intention, again, was to find out where people were at and help guide how we grouped individuals for training. So as a workplace intervention, with very busy staff, we wanted something that wasn't wasting staff time and built on where staff were at. And then in terms of that training and training resources, we built five modules that captured the learning requirements identified in the expanded competencies and are described on the screen. So they range from general concepts in population and public health, right down to reading tables and charts, and then quantifying a public health issue. We also developed some tools and guides that we used when consulting with staff and that are now available for staff to use independently as well. And so this helps someone walk through starting with identifying in general terms what the problem is to the gathering of the data, and then being able to use it in context of their own program question. So to test out this new process, we started as a pilot and we engaged five pilot teams that needed to assess data around five different issues. Each of the teams were composed of specialists, public health nurses, and at least one manager or supervisor. And teams were selected if they had an interest in understanding the data for a specific program issue and if they had an immediate need for health data to answer a question. We completed our pilot process over the course of a five-month period, and we started with a pre-assessment of proficiency using our competency assessment tool that was given to all those involved in our pilot. Based on those results, we grouped pilot staff by learning needs, and we conducted targeted small group interactive training. And then the delivery of the modules consisted of teaching of the concepts, followed by interactive activities that provided people with the ability to apply that new knowledge. The training took place over 2.5 days, followed by a series of mentoring sessions, and that was usually about 5 to 7 meetings. And throughout those sessions, we discussed the data decision that needed to be made, data sources and limitations, how to interpret the information, then how to apply it to a decision. And that was followed by a post-assessment and self-evaluation. So I'm going to move on to the juicy part, which is the results. So this table shows the results of our pre- and post-pilot competency assessment. The competency assessment was administered to pilot participants, but also to a group of controls that were matched on role profile, so a manager to a manager, for example. The controls received no training and no mentoring, they just did that test. So we measured the knowledge based on the questions in that competency assessment that related to each of our five modules, and that's reflected in that first column, that's the names of the modules. The second column shows a difference in mean score between the pilot and control groups for each of the modules. So in column 3, comparing the mean scores of the pilot to the control group prior to the intervention, there was no significant difference between groups, so pilot and control staff had the same baseline knowledge. The columns in that look gray on the screen, they show the difference in mean scores from the competency assessment after the intervention. And as you can see, we found significant improvement in knowledge for the pilot groups for all concepts in their five modules compared to the controls. So it gave us some insight that our intervention resulted in some improvement of knowledge. We also obtained qualitative feedback on the process, the modules through a self-assessment. So the axis on the bottom is the percent of pilot members reporting high or very high ability to do the activities that are on the y-axis, so describing the magnitude of a problem, describing data, identifying data needs. So compared to before the pilot, participants felt that they had a much higher ability to do those things and to know where to find data and identify data for their program question. Perhaps the most important result was that each of the pilot groups had a data decision at the end of the day. And so one example was a team was looking at whether smoking cessation strategies in the workplace would make a difference in Peel's smoking rates. So we knew intuitively that residents of Peel and other jurisdictions outside of Peel and that non-Peel residents worked within Peel workplaces. So the data question was, well, how many Peel smokers work in Peel workplaces? And we found that even with working smoking cessation strategy, it would have the potential to reach 88,000 Peel smokers. So that was something that the team could move forward with. So just finally, just a couple of lessons learned. The success of our pilots was based on several key things that we learned, one of which was using that research evidence to understand a problem and create a solution. So that helped us give us credibility and understand an approach that demonstrated an effectiveness. Commitment of senior management was critical in elevating the importance of this issue, and we also gained buy-in from staff because of the result of their participation. And we also learned quite a bit about sustainability and creating momentum and the need for human resources to support this change. So now, in terms of moving forward, we've communicated to middle management about decisions made through our pilots. And then beyond the outcomes of our pilot groups, we're starting to see the value in using those data in decisions within the organization. Other teams are bringing forward problems and trying to use our tools as well. And we're working now to disseminate this more broadly. So So we have a long way to go, but we've made some inroads. And if you remember our practitioner at the precipice, through our work we've created the supports to help staff on the path to the most to become the most effective public health practitioner. Perfect. Thank you.
We are a little ahead of schedule, so if there's a question from Molly, please.
I was wondering, in that training, did you adjust anything about writing up the data that you find and ways of communicating effectively in the written word?
Yeah. So there's two pieces to that question. So our focus in this particular round was around skill development.
Okay.
But at the end of, you remember that knowledge translation was one of the things we identified as a barrier.
Uh-huh.
That's both from the producer end. Are we producing the most effective products that people can use? But also are we, in terms of the uptake of information, what is the best way our audience will be able to use information? That's something that's going to be done in a later stage. So for each of the decisions that the pilot groups were involved with, they did have to do a write-up of the data decision that they came up with. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.